First, the don'ts. Don't expect yourself to explain the fertility cycle to couples. It's not your job to present the how-to. That should be done by couples who practice natural family planning, or by nurses or doctors if we want to medicalize it. But it's not the priests, it's not an expected thing that priests would sit down with a couple and instruct them as to how to practice natural family planning. Secondly, don't get preoccupied with effectiveness rates. It's a standard term in all family planning. What's the effectiveness rate? Well, I mean, effectiveness rates vary according to who determines what they are. Sterilization is supposed to be 100% effective. Condom is supposed to be 90% effective. But, you know, it means that you have to use it when you're having intercourse, and it means that it has to be technically perfect to assure the effectiveness. My point is, don't try to oversell natural family planning on its effectiveness rate. What's fundamentally true is that it's scientifically verifiable and reliable if people learn the methods and apply themselves to practicing the methods, whichever methods it might be. Don't expect natural family planning to cure marriage problems. The marriage relationship is weak or fragile. NFP is not likely to cure it. And NFP is probably not going to work well because the effectiveness of NFP depends upon communication by the couple. Don't rely on knowledge alone. It's knowledge and experience that leads to satisfaction with natural family planning. I remember a couple one time telling me that they were the family life directors of their diocese, and they were going to teach natural family planning. And I said, well, did you ever study it? Did you ever take a course in it? And the man said to me, no, he said, I got a background in chemistry. I'm a salesman. I've been selling chemical products, so I can master this stuff. That poor diocese, they were in for real trouble. Don't be legalistic about it. That is, you have to do this because the church says so. Don't be impatient with couples who come back faltering, maybe even failing. Don't be preoccupied with the abstinence side of it and the couple's ability to practice abstinence. Fake practice abstinence. A lot of reasons couples practice abstinence. We get all wound up about that, but in a sexually charged atmosphere such as our society is, and where sex is thrown at you, you know, left, right, and center to trigger off sexual excitement, abstinence looks impossible. And don't be worried about unintended pregnancies. Most couples, no matter what kind of contraception they're using, will tell you that an awful lot of so-called unintended pregnancies were intended, at least by one of the two people. Now, what should you do? First of all, be available to inform couples that natural family planning exists, that there are a variety of methods, that they're scientifically valid and reliable, that practice of NFP, while it takes little effort, can be satisfying and can be enriching for the marriage. Motivate couples. Information alone is not going to change anybody, much less direct their energies. Catholics are a religious minority in a socially, as I told you the other day, a socially and morally pathological system. They need to be motivated, be lifted above the controversies and the battles that they're constantly caught up in. You have to motivate them to have a different view of sex than the one that comes to us from the sexual revolution. You have to motivate them to think about their marriage relationship. You have to inspire them. Lift their vision above the sexual chaos and hedonism of our country. Help them to see that sexual pleasure is based on love. Help them to understand their ability to invest in their relationship, to realize their dreams and to achieve their values. Help them towards marital spirituality. That's where the priest comes in. They need marital spirituality in order not only to practice natural family planning, but to grow in holiness, to tap into marriage as sacrament for the spiritual riches that God has put there. Instill confidence in them. Remind them of the witness of other couples. Remind them that they can learn, because they've learned so many other things in life that they never thought they'd learn. Remind them that if they are a little uncomfortable or antsy about taking the first step, that that's logical in our society. They don't have to be uncertain or not to apologize for that. And then finally, encourage them continually when they begin the practice of natural family planning. Don't just leave them out there, or don't assume that because they took the course, now they're all set. Build on their strengths, emphasize to them the value of communication, and be available to communicate with them yourselves, because they look for someone else. They look for someone outside the marriage relationship to bear them up, to give them some kind of encouragement, some kind of sense of security about what they're doing. Once they become accustomed to it, then they'll be back to you, wanting to know why you're not going to do this for somebody else, or wouldn't you like to do something else, or would you like to take the course? You don't have to do those things. Dr. Hilgers, who's running this institute next week in Creighton, has done a yeoman's job. He's trained all kinds of people, mostly doctors and nurses. And he runs a course for priests. And if anybody wants to take it, hey, be my guest. I'll never take it. If you leave it to me to explain natural family planning to a couple, that's just going to up the population explosion that much more. I can never get straight which end of the cycle is which. But frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I don't have to do that. My job is to encourage, inspire, motivate, and lift the couple up. So let me assure you that we're not bringing you in here tonight to dun all this biology into you. Joe and Patty are going to give you some of the background, some of the personal experience, and hopefully they're going to motivate you by giving you a sense of security in your role as priests, not as teachers, not as practitioners, just in your role as priests. And they'll take it from there. They and thousands of others like them spread across these United States who can go in and instruct the newly married couple or an older married couple and make them feel informed, knowledgeable, most of all, secure. With that, I turn the podium over to Joe and Patty. We're going to have problems.
Thank you very much, Bishop McHugh, and I'd just like to tell you a little bit about us. Pat and I will be married married 28 years, June the 12th, and we have four sons from 27 to 14. We live right here this isn't Bergen County. We live in Bergen County in Waldwick, and our parish is St. Luke's and in Hohokus. I wanted to just, this is a real, it's an honor for us and a real privilege to, and we really believe that we are here representing thousands of couples, as Bishop said, many of who we've been involved with in the diocese here, and we've taught natural family planning, continue to share what it means in our lives. We bring them with us to the best of our ability, and not only to those other couples, but to the priests who have touched our lives and encouraged us and have really brought us to this point. And we'd like especially tonight to dedicate this talk of ours to both our dads, who are a real part of what has brought us here tonight. This July, Pat's dad is 6 years in heaven, and my dad 28 years. So we dedicate whatever we have to offer to them, plus the pain and suffering of thinking of having to come here and talk to you.
You know, if we look nervous, it's just because we are nervous. One of the things that we were really honored and privileged when Monsignor called us and asked us to be a part of this institute, and then when we received the brochure, that little pamphlet through the mail, and everybody else's name had six letters after it, and the only thing we had was a Mr. and Mrs. before, we thought, maybe he made a mistake, you know. And I think we've really been painting with that all along, and we were glad I came Monday morning, and then Joe and I came, I guess it was Monday evening, to get a feel of it, and still a little bit in pain. And then today, separately, the Lord really inspired both of us to realize that what we have to offer is who we are and all that He has blessed us with through one another and through the church, and really most especially through the priests that we have had in our lives, who have called us to a vision of matrimony that we could have not envisioned ourselves. Who called us to see it as a real call from the Lord, a call to holiness, a call to be an image of His love for His church. And that is really what has inspired us through our years of marriage and encouraged us to go on. And, you know, we thank God for the church to continue to shed the light on the truth within all of its teachings, moral teachings, especially within marriage and in sexuality and infertility, and the priests that have called us to see the vision that we were unable to see. While we needed our fellow, you know, couples, a couple who's going to talk, I guess it's tomorrow morning, Gene and Judy, have been a big part of our life, and in the day-to-day struggle or joys of it, they are there with us. But to really see the vision of what we could be or what the Lord has called us to be within our sacrament has come from the sacrament of orders, and that's has been a real gift to us.
Do you know, I think when I look back over our life and what we call our journey in fertility control, what I really think is, you know, neither of us are theologians, neither of us had formal education in terms of the church's teachings, or, you know, we have been churchgoers the better part of our lives, but no real scripture studies or anything else. Really, what we see has touched our lives is the grace that we were given through our sacrament of matrimony. There is no other way for us to explain all that the Lord has given us, except that, or the opportunities that we've been given, the places we've been called, that we would not have chosen. We find ourselves there. And it has to be the grace of the sacrament that has blessed us on this journey. So what we'd really like to do is share with you our own experience of those 28 years, or actually it's four years we went out before we got married. So it's 32 years in our journey in fertility control,
basically.
But we'd like to do that in kind of three sections, which would be our courtship and early married years, then our, well, you could put it even our romance, then our disillusionment, and true joy. I think some of you recognize that, but that's kind of what we think of. And where we are now in our lives.
And then we'd like to start with that because we think that's really the gift we have to offer. We have a little bit on the method itself, just to give you a tinge of knowledge, and then hopefully questions and answers. And I have a lot of handouts for you to bring home and to maybe to learn a little bit about it on your own and to what other people are saying about natural family planning. Who starts here? Me, of course. We grew up in the same town. Well, actually, I grew up in the Bronx, but we moved to the same town in New Jersey called Edgewater when I was six, and we grew up in the same town. Joe was 2 years ahead of me in school, and while we knew of one another, we actually had our first date when I was a sophomore in high school and Joe was a senior in high school. And although we were very young, I mean, we have older children now, and if they would have come to me, I was 15, Joe was 17, and it was really within a few months that we were talking about our life together. Now, if any of my 15-year-olds came to me and said, "Mom, I found the girl I want to spend my life with," I would have said, "You're nuts, honey. You know, go back to school and when you're, you know." But actually, this is the way. Actually, when I think back to when and Joe actually proposed to me, I can't come up with an absolute proposal. You know,
I did though.
We're going to argue that.
Actually, when I think of this particular time and the time we first started going out, as Pat said, although we kind of knew each other, it was a small town, Edgewater, and we knew of each other. I was 17 years old in high school. I really had no plans of going to college or anything else like that. I thought that I would join the Navy and see the world. Having grown up on the Hudson River, I figured I was experienced, and that might be what I wanted to do. Basically, no direction in life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've spoken to priests and often heard that wondering if this is a real call to vocation is a difficult thing. Am I really called to vocation? Am I not called to vocation? And I must say that I had the clearest call to vocation ever. The vocation of marriage. And I was sitting in a park with a bunch of my friends, and Pat walked through in her white short shorts. Mm-hmm. And that physical attraction was, I think, in male-female relationships through the wonder of God's creation, it's a physical attraction that both first draws you to each other. It was very shortly thereafter that I saw that beauty, the beauty inside that was under her beauty externally, was what was so beautiful, what was made her beautiful outside, and what I knew what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, and I wanted to spend it with Pat. She was only 15. She's Italian. Her father's Sicilian. Her mother is from Naples. I knew that at 17, if I asked him for her hand in marriage or talked about it, that I might have some trouble. So we started our dating.
You know, when I think back, when we think back to those days, one of the great part of our dating was the communication, just how natural it was, and the desire to learn about one another, a real desire. We couldn't be with one another enough, and I couldn't learn enough about Joe. And what I realized in retrospect is that in talking with one another, I learned a lot about who I was and what I valued. Certainly I learned about who Joe was and who he valued, and the revelation was unbelievable, and it was wonderful, a great time. It didn't matter what we did as long as we were together. One of the things we talked about was this life we were going to have together, and of course, you know, one of the things we did was Joe drew a picture of the house we would live in, you know, our dream house in our dreaming, you know, with this huge house with a pool in the center of it and the rooms around it, of course, you know, nothing near the house that we live in today. And another thing we dreamed about was the children we would have, and being idealistic and loving children, I wanted 8 children, and Joe was more realistic, logical, being the male. 4 was a number, but being so much in romance, we decided on 6. So that was our goal, and it was a wonderful time. Again, we couldn't get 4 years. And, you know, when I think back, you don't realize as you're living through it, but the gift that we received from our family, the church, and the world, they were speaking in unison back then, 28 years ago. And what they said to us, we didn't realize it, was that marriage was forever. You know, we didn't know anyone that was divorced back then. So this was something important. That children were a natural part of marriage, so we couldn't wait to have children. And 3, that intercourse was a marital act. And although there were many times we found it difficult, Even myself, I found it difficult. It was something that we tried to achieve. And what we, in retrospect, what we realized is that it was because we were called and asked to be chaste with one another that we found out so much about one another, that we learned how to be intimate with one another other than genitally, you know. It was almost that we were forced to communicate, to learn how to be intimate by being totally present, really revealing our hearts and minds and souls to one another, and being totally present to one another.
I think, you know, one of the difficulties today with courtship in young people is that too often active sexual life short-circuits communication. And without that deep communication, they never really build a foundation that this marriage is going to stand. Now, we tell them when we talk in high schools and things, you know, if the attraction and the love for one another is purely physical attraction, that someday neither of us are going to be as attractive as we were. There will always come along someone more attractive, okay? And if that relationship doesn't get further than that, it's doomed to failure. If it doesn't get further than the physical attraction to each other. I know for myself, and I said this to our own sons, and I've said it in high school classes, if at 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, and Pat at 15, 16, 17, 18, those years that we went out and we were chaste, if someone had said to me, well, tonight you're going to have intercourse, I would not have talked for 4 or 5 hours to Pat that night. We wouldn't have talked, communicated for 4 and 5 hours, which is what we used to do. I couldn't be with her enough, all right? And why did I keep coming back the next night? I don't know. Maybe somebody once said to me, maybe you lived in hope. Maybe I did live in hope, okay, that tonight was the night. It never came, but I... From the moment we first started going out, okay, my whole life changed. I couldn't wait to be with her. Driving to work in the morning, I thought of her. Coming home in the afternoon, I thought of her. I thought of her at lunchtime. I had a real purpose. And the communication that we had was, for me, it was a totally different experience. I had two brothers. I was not around any girls except my mother. No small children around. Pat was just the opposite. First of all, just in the way she listened to me, I was able to discover things in me that I never would have. So what are you doing? You're 15, 16, 17 years old. We used to stand around the corner, a bunch of guys. I mean, you don't say to a bunch of guys that you're trying to be a part of, you know, did you see that movie last night? It really brought tears to my eyes. I mean, that's not something you say to your 17-year-old friends. I never did. Okay, when you're trying to be one of them, you know, Pat was some place where I could say, yes, I had hopes and dreams for my life. I had tender parts of me. I cared about things deeply, not the normal conversations I had with my boyfriend. So all of a sudden I had found a place, a person who would listen to me. I never had the thought that she would say, that's stupid, you know, never had a sense that I might be rejected if I shared something with her. And I know that it takes, in our life together now, it's one of the differences between the creation of man and woman. Pat has to say to me at least 25 times, what's the matter? She has to set a whole scene of tenderness and openness to finally get me to share something that's bothering me. Okay, I think that's typical male. Pat, if I come home from work and I look at Pat and I say, what's wrong? Nothing. Pat, what's wrong? I soon know everything that's wrong. Within 2 minutes, she has broken down those barriers and is willing to share with me all of those, all the things that are troubling her. So really what I discovered was that I needed, I think as a man, I needed that place to be listened to really find out who I was. And I found that in Pat. And I think that communication
not short-circuited by sexual activity during those years, chastity or intercourse during those years, really has served our marriage well.
Yeah, we're saying, you know, that 4 years of courtship to marriage was wonderful. And while both of us grew up in Catholic families, they were different. Joe's family went to Mass as a family every Sunday. And in my family, we were kind of sent as kids. There were extended members who went to Mass, but it seemed like Joe's family participated more in the life of the church than my own. And so coming to our marriage, neither of us really knew the person of Jesus Christ personally. But what brought us to want the most for our marriage was that we had this unbelievable love that was so bright and real. It was like a third person. I mean, I couldn't use the terms then it was God's love because I didn't know that. And we somehow knew that to keep this, that we needed to invite the Lord somehow, we didn't know how, into this relationship so that our love would be there, because we vowed one another to one another that we would not be one of those half-alive couples 10 years down the road, you know, but that our love was going to be even greater as time went on. We didn't have any idea how we were going to do that or if it was even possible, but we vowed that to one another. And so we got married with our hopes and dreams and of having this family of 6 children. What we never did was talk about how we were going to space these children. We did get married open to love and life as the church. We took it in its to its
literal
word,
sense.
Literal sense, open to love and life. And we went a week to Florida and a week to Puerto Rico. And we had a wonderful honeymoon. It was, I mean, even the day of the wedding, we kept on pinching one another after 4 years. This is it, you know, here we are. Look around, let's remember this, you know, we've waited so long. And about 3 weeks after our wedding, we're sitting in our cute little three-room apartment that we had fixed up and having our first really good argument at the breakfast table. And all of a sudden, I started getting sick. And I had thought at that point it was the water in Puerto Rico why my period was late, but soon to realize that I'd become pregnant on our honeymoon. And so 9 months after our wedding, I gave birth to our first son, Joseph, who is 27. And, you know, it was a surprise, because really only Doris Day became pregnant on our honeymoon, you know. It was a great surprise, but it wasn't an awful setback, because this was a dream we had, and it was a reality that people who got married had children. You know, we tell the pre-Cana kids, when we give pre-Canas, we say, you know, when we got married, if you weren't pregnant within the first year, people were saying, oh, they have a problem. Today, if you get married and you're pregnant in the first year, they say, oh, you have a problem, you know. So it was, again, a surprise to the reality of how potent our fertility was, our love for one another was, that this new life was created already. But it was wonderful, and Joe couldn't walk around enough with this baby, bumping into people so they would have to look in the carriage, you know, to see his son. And it was a wonderful time, and it was our dream coming true, and our sexual relationship was an open and wonderful thing. It was a time of learning and creating, and it was just full of romance and everything that was promised to us.
Yes. Do you know, one of the common arguments, and people will say this today as well, you should really, you know, their argument for living together before marriage is, well, you really have to know if you're sexually
compatible.
Compatible. Thank you. Compatible. And I still say to this day, had we not had 4 children, I'm not sure we're doing it right. But it's wonderful, okay? We had nothing to compare it with. I think it was such a gift in our marriages, in our marriage, that we have just discovered each other. And our sexual relation has grown with respect for one another and love for one another and openness with one another, and never any regrets or comparisons, I think, has been a wonderful gift and really a good argument for being chaste prior to marriage. But it was a wonderful time. And I can remember when Pat first came home from the doctor and told me that she was pregnant, my initial response was, I was thankful. Because I have an identical twin brother, and my Irish mother used to say that normally one is weaker than the other and usually doesn't live past puberty. We both had made it past that. And she says if they both do, one may has a very good chance of being sterile. So I immediately thought, thank God it's not me. And then I felt bad for my brother Tommy. But there was relief. And there was, we were young, 21 and 19. As a matter of fact, when Joey was born, I was collecting my unemployment check. I did not have a job. But it was just the beginning of this wonderful life that we were going to have together.
I soon, you know, went for my checkup to my doctor, Catholic OB, and he and I came up with rhythm. That's what Joe and I were going to practice, because love and life was kind of like a little, you know, being married 9 months and having one baby. Maybe rhythm would give us, be able to space a child. So I went home armed with rhythm, and I told Joe, this is what we're going to do now. And we started using rhythm in our relationship. I was the only one who knew it. I was totally in control of fertility and really of our sexual relationship. I know today that when one partner is in charge of the sexual relationship, there is trouble coming. Because I felt burdened by that responsibility, totally burdened. I mean, if I became pregnant, it was going to be my fault. Somehow I had goofed. But on the other hand, I also had control. And if I didn't like, you know, the way things were going, or if what Joe wasn't treating me well, I didn't have to have a headache. I suddenly became fertile. And so, you know, then there would be no intercourse. So that's how, so there was a control of our sexual relationship. It's an unhealthy thing when one partner is totally in control of the sexual relationship.
And I think the other thing that added to it was that being asked or choosing to practice rhythm without anyone able to say to us, well, you know, there's an abstinence time, and maybe this is what you should try in the abstinence time. We really took it as there's going to be a time when if we have intercourse, Pat's going to get pregnant. So the best way to deal with this is you go your way, and you go, I'll go mine, and call me when you're infertile, okay? Which did not serve our marriage well. We really didn't understand how to deal with it, you know? And what we found was that there were some very long period of abstinence because Pat didn't have a regular cycle, and calendar rhythm, most, you know, is just based on a strict calendar. She had an irregular cycle. We were always wondering, or she was always wondering, whether she was fertile or infertile. So we had some long periods of abstinence where we really found ourselves further and further apart. And all of a sudden, when that magic day came that I'm infertile, it was like having to reintroduce ourselves to each other. We had no closeness, no tenderness toward each other or anything. So it was really, it did not serve our marriage well. But as they say, Pat didn't have rhythm, and Michael was born to us 18 months after
Joseph.
So we didn't practice rhythm too long. Now, we know many beautiful couples who have practiced rhythm throughout their lives and it has served their marriage as well. I don't even pretend that we did a very good job at it or knew how to do it well or whatever. But all of a sudden now, I was 22 years old, where 2 years ago I had only myself to worry about. Now there were four of us. And my sense, I think, as male, as provider and protector and caretaker of this, I panicked. I really did not have a very good job at the time. We were still in our little three-room apartment. Now we had the full Mediterranean bedroom set with two cribs and two of this and two of that. And I was in panic, to say it mildly. I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, Michael, our second son, was a wonderful gift. And we were still on that. You know, we were right where we had hoped to be on our way to six children. But all of a sudden, that tension, that pressure of needing just some breathing room. That's kind of what I felt. I just need a little bit of time. Just give me a little bit of time, you know. And this was in 1967, and very shortly thereafter, or actually a few months before Michael was born, Humanavita had come out. And I remember the Times headline, Pope Says No, or something to that effect. And when Pat and I talked about it, I was really angry. I was a little angry with it. And I said, you know, sarcastically, did you ever see his house in Rome? He can have all the kids he wants. He's got a big house. We don't have it. We have no room to walk around the bedroom. I mean, this is what's reality, and that's really where I was angry. We tried what the church said. Mm-hmm. Underneath all that anger was really pain. It was really pain in the two of us, because I also had the sense that the first time, now it was 6 or 7 years we've been going out together and married, for the first time we had to lessen the dream that we had for what our life would be together. So it was with all of those mixed emotions that we made the decision that we would choose to contracept artificially. It was just for that...
Just
for a short period of time. And we looked through the list, which is not very much different than it is today, and we chose what we thought was the least harmful physically, and we chose to use condoms, which we did. When I look back now, we made one decision to artificially contracept. We never again even talked about the issue or questioned why we did what we did, and 7.5 years went by. We made one decision that lasted 7.5 years, never questioned. And condoms are 90% effective. For us, they were 100. They were 100% effective. Every time we did the course and used a condom, we never became pregnant. So little by little, the act of intercourse no longer had that wonderful, special gift or meaning in our relationship. When we looked at those little boys, Michael and Joey, and thought of children individually, because we didn't do it together anymore, okay, that act of intercourse had nothing to do with that. There was no possibility. For us, artificial contraception and condoms became 100%. And very, very soon, the act of intercourse in our relationship became just another act. Nothing to do with the possibility of procreation. We really didn't realize it then. The words are, we separated love from life.
You know, initially, there was once we realized, we convinced one another that this is what we had to do to give ourselves some time. And we kind of put everything else underground, all of the rest of the feelings underground. There was an initial thing of excitement, thinking there was no abstinence here. There was never going to be a time that we had to say no to one another. And isn't that exciting? And for a short period of time, it was. I don't know exactly how long, 6 months, a year, whatever. But very subtly and gradually, we can see today, we didn't know it as we were living it out, that contraception had an effect upon our whole marriage relationship, subtly and gradually. I know for myself, one of the big areas was began probably in our sexual relationship. There was never a time that we had to say no to one another, which we thought initially was wonderful. Isn't that great? This is what the world is striving for, you know, never having to say no. And yet what it did was it made every time we became affectionate to one another, loving to one another, without realizing it, it ended in intercourse, you know? And I began to feel and think to myself, anytime Joe would show affection, subtly and gradually I'd begin to stiffen up and think, yeah, I know where this is leading. You know, this is leading to the bedroom. You know, and I began to, for the first time in our marriage, having a doubt and wondering, was Joe really after loving me, or was he after intercourse? You know, were the values being, you know, I didn't think that out, but I know what I was feeling. And I was beginning to feel a little used here. And because of that, again, I didn't realize it at the time, but years later I realized The minute my trust was not 100% with my husband, my sexual desires for him went underground to a great degree. Not totally, but the freedom that I had to express my love to him sexually and to let him know that I desired him sexually, I wasn't that trusting. I didn't want to be quite that vulnerable anymore. I didn't think these things out, though. That's the thing is, you know, you live them out because your feelings and your values and your trust for one another is being played with here, and you respond to it without thinking it out. We still had a good, solid marriage, you know. I never thought that, you know, any infidelity or that Joe loved me less, but, you know, was I being used here? That was a question. I mean, I couldn't verbalize it to myself. Every time it came into the back of my mind, I kind of shoved it out, but it was definitely there at the time.
And in terms of the sexual relationship, on artificial contraception, first of all, after that initial period of never of rejoicing and never having to say no, which didn't last too very long, there was an immediate dissatisfaction with the method itself. They talk about now one of the gifts should be spontaneity. Well, there was nothing spontaneous about starting to make love and then having to go get a condom or whatever, you know. That was never part of the romance and everything. So there was immediately some dissatisfaction with the method itself, but rationalized it was, well, it needs to be this way, you know, otherwise Pat's going to be pregnant again and that kind of thing. But then what happened is I always saw myself as the aggressor. There seemed to be never a time where Pat would initiate it. We fell into these roles. Okay, and the thing, you know, what is so difficult to see in it is we looked around and we looked at ourselves and we were on our own, evaluated our marriage, but at the same time, communication becomes involved in it. We started to talk less, but then we looked at our life. Pat had two little babies to care for. I was now working two jobs to you know, for the American dream, to have that house in the suburbs, to have the second car, the kids could go to nursery school and all kinds of things. We were good people. I looked at Pat, I loved her. Why didn't we feel in our sexual relationship and in our whole relationship, why wasn't that spark there anymore? And I could always justify it. The spark's not there because the two of us are working hard. Things are going to be better. How do they get better? We didn't pretend to have the answer, but when we looked around, which I think all couples do, and compared ourselves, what are we complaining about? We knew Sue and Bob. We knew them for years. They were married around the same time. They were divorced. We knew this one was fooling around. You know, we're not doing so bad. I know Pat loves me, and I know she's dedicated to me and the family and everything else, and you kind of go, well, this is what it is. And in the dark of night, that was one of the saddest thoughts, because one of the things we never believed would happen to us in our marriage is that we'd ever be less than fully excited about one another and about our relationship and all that it could be. And yet, to lay there, I knew it wasn't her fault. I knew it wasn't. It didn't seem like it was mine. And we really knew no place to go. And then, all of a sudden, you start listening, because the world has the answers to all of these questions. And the best place to get them, I always say this, is in Pathmark and ShopRite. When you're waiting to check out, the magazines there have all the answers, especially in sexuality. I've been monitoring them for years, okay? was the search for that for the longest time.
Multiple
orgasm. I mean, they have all these kinds of things. That's in the sexual area. In the relationship area, they have the same answers. I mean, you have to be, Pat's home with the children. She's talking baby talk all day. She has to keep herself
interesting.
You're out in the business world, so Pat went back to school. I encouraged her to go back to school. Get yourself interesting. We took bridge lessons. You have to have mutual, and we found ourselves for 5 or 6 years searching all over the place, what we were searching for, why we weren't feeling excited about one another, and maybe even not even identifying that we weren't feeling excited about one another.
I think we individually knew something was missing, but we didn't know if that's, the saying, that's how it is after you're married, you settled into marriage, and that was the thing that scared me the most. If this was for the rest of my life, God save me from this, because that type of routine and monotonous and nothing meaning everything spreads into all of your life. It's not certainly just your sexual life. We had no idea the core of it started there. Communication was there. Our communication was no longer that vulnerableness from our heart either. It was, where are we going this weekend? Did you pick the clothes up from the cleaners? Did the kids go to the dentist? But yet we were, as Joe said, we were doing good things. But we were searching. We didn't realize desperately searching, but we were searching. The Lord in his wonderful intervention saved us at a party. We were at a family gathering. Cousins of mine said, we went on this very inexpensive private weekend. You guys deserve it. And we were ready to go away by ourselves, too. They said the words marriage and counter. We never heard it. We really didn't hear it. We brought our bathing suits, a bottle of scotch, and our tennis rackets to a marriage and counter weekend, if anybody knows what a marriage and counter weekend. And as St. Paul got knocked on his, so did we. We really did, because the weekend, what the marriage and counter weekend does is it takes every distraction away from you. It takes the telephone, the job, the kids, all the outside world, and it makes you vulnerable again to one another. Naked, once more, And there I found the Joe that I had fallen in love with, and he found the Pat that he had fallen in love with. And at that point, we vowed never to lose that again. But the wonderful, more wonderful part about that was, for the first time in our married lives, the Lord, who was this distant person standing outside, always looking in, truly joined us, or we were open to seeing him as a part of us and experiencing his love very personally and really. And it was the first time, probably on that weekend, that we heard the call from orders, from holy orders, to tell us that we were to be this vision of the Lord's love, or the image of the Lord's love for his church, that our love for one another was to be so bright and wonderful that people could see the Lord's love for his church imaged in that. And when we thought back to the love that we had when we first met and were first married, it really was that, we remembered that. And it took us a while in this deep communication to finally get to the difficult area of fertility control. We were now in the suburbs in our home. We had the station wagon, we had a dog, and we had two children. Everything the modern world says will make you happy. And we looked at this, and friends of ours mentioned to us natural family planning. And we heard rhythm, and we had done that before. And Joe said, no way, forget that. That's this freight train of fertility starting up again, and I'm not willing to do that. And about a month later, they mentioned it again, and we were just willing to give ourselves that chance. We needed to at least see if this could not work for us. And we went to the classes with trepidation and you better show us type of attitude that this thing works. Well, we had been married 10 years. I had two children. And the first initial thing was I couldn't believe how little I knew about my body and how it worked. And the first thing I did was I felt a real excitement about what it is to be woman, about this wonderful creation of womanhood that the Lord had created me to work so wonderfully and beautifully, and a real sense of respect for who I am, and what my potential was, and all womanhood, you know. It was just wonderful, and I couldn't believe I had had two children and married 10 years and didn't know half of the stuff that I learned there.
And I initially thought at the first class we took that this was a mistake, and somehow I had to get out of here, because they sent us out after the first class with some information and told us that what they were asking us to do was to abstain from intercourse until we found ourselves in the infertile phase. They couldn't tell us how long that would be. The information they gave us would determine that, you know. So I went out of there with my head between my knees, and what I realized was that there had been many times during the 10 years that we had abstained for long periods of time. One of our children was in the hospital. Pat stayed with him 3 weeks. There were times we were apart and then arguing with each other and everything else that we went much longer than that without intercourse. But all of a sudden, it was like they're telling me now I have to abstain, and all of a sudden it was going to be painful, you know. It turned out that first abstinence was 37 days. And I will tell you that in our 28 years of marriage and 32 and 4 other years, if I had to name moments of closeness in our relationship, 2 of them happened during that abstinence time. And I think the wonderful gift that natural family planning is, part of it is the abstinence time, which hopefully we can tell you a little bit about. But during that first abstinence, it was maybe 6 or 7 days or maybe 10 days, I don't know how long it was, into abstinence, because we left there and they gave us an idea of how to practice this abstinence. It wasn't like with rhythm where you go your way and you go yours, or take a lot of cold showers and do this. No, they said what we're asking you is abstinence from intercourse. We're not asking you to abstain from loving one another. Do those special things for one another. Dinners, fires, lay in each other's arms. Be tender with one another. Love each other. Don't run away from each other. And I think all of a sudden, after 10 or 12 days, whatever it was, I had this revelation. Pat was abstaining too. It was the first time I realized, I wasn't thinking about myself, but I realized that Pat did desire me. It had been a long time on artificial contraception where I thought I was the only one interested, okay? And all of a sudden, there was wonder in it. What we realized, what we gave up on artificial contraception, a gift that can't be replaced, and that is yearning. We were yearning for each other. We had given up for 7 years in our relationship on artificial contraception, yearning. There was never a time we had to yearn for each other, because when you wanted to have intercourse, you had intercourse. Okay? It was never a time where you really desired that other person, really, and let each other know that. So we made it through that, and we learned natural family planning. We used natural family planning for almost a year. And during that year, one of the other wonderful gifts of natural family planning that you give up on artificial contraception is when you come to the abstinence time, we're both involved with the charting, and all of a sudden we have to say to each other, we're coming to the abstinence time, which means if you don't want to achieve the fertile time, if you don't want to achieve a pregnancy, we have to abstain. All of a sudden the question came up, which we hadn't talked about in 7.5 years, is, what are we abstaining? Why are we abstaining? Why would we choose to abstain? Because we don't want a child. Why don't we want a child? We wanted 6 of them. You wanted 8. We settled on 6. Now we have 2, and we're still just not having children. And so that came back. And I remember times during that abstinence time. I knew, not during the abstinence time, during our artificial contraception, near the end of it, I remember clearly sitting on the couch, Pat on one end, me on the other. If there was a baby on TV, I didn't look her way. I knew there was tears in her eyes. I didn't know how to face it. We were on artificial contraception. That's all there is to it. You know, it no longer had anything to do with life. So we used natural family planning for a year, and we used it to postpone. And each time we came to the fertile time, more and more, we really talk to each other about what are we afraid of? What are we abstaining for? You know, and we made the decision to try to be open to life, and our third son, Matthew, was born to us. Pat became pregnant, and Matthew was born to us. A gift from God, a gift to our family, a gift to us. And we again used natural family planning while Pat breastfed Matthew. And we again talked about it. We decided that Matthew, being 10 years younger than his older brothers, might like a sibling. So we were tried again using natural family planning. Pat became pregnant. And John Paul, our fourth son, was born to us. To this day, that's John Paul just turned 14. We continue to practice natural family planning. Each time the fertile time comes, we need to speak about why are we abstaining. During those 14 years, there have been times, Pat, I know she'd like a baby, and it just seemed like circumstances were, well, right, not right now, you know. Other times we had to take my mother in, care for Pat's mother, I wasn't there, whatever. I love what the church says about fertility to us couples. It's the wisdom of the church, and it's in Humanae Vitae where they say that we should be generous with the gift of fertility and responsible. And that's what needs to be balanced out each time we communicate. Can we be generous now? Would it be responsible to try to have another child right now?
I see that really a healthy tension, it has become a healthy tension within our relationship that keeps us pulling towards one another and the Lord, you know, that He is a part of this. And this is, and the respect, that's the thing, within the abstinence time when we do decide that we're not going to be open to life this cycle, the respect that we have for that potential, and sometimes the regret that we cannot be open to life at this time. But there is we still know that this wonderful gift is there. You know, after a time of using natural family planning, I think there are so many gifts. First of all, both are involved. Most teachers throughout the country here anyway teach it to couples. Not all, but most do. In the Newark Diocese here, we teach it as a couple to couples. And we teach it so that the wife observes the sign, the husband does the charting, and together they interpret and make decisions. So it's not one person's responsibility. And there is a trust and a real communication that needs to take place. It keeps them going towards one another. And there is this natural, hopefully if we're working at it, there's this natural romance and honeymoon every cycle, every month, the real being pulled towards one another, and a real celebration. I know for myself, after we lived out natural family planning for a while, well, it wasn't, and still at times it's not easy for us, but Joe's saying yes to it and living it out lovingly said clear to me that I was his treasure, than anything else he could have done or said, I think. That, you know, I was his treasure and not intercourse, that I was the value. And what that did for me was that released my sexual desires, too. Much more natural, you know, it just has brought such peace to our relationship, such excitement. To us, it is a part of the good news for married couples. You know, sometimes when we get an opportunity at a pre-Cana or somewhere, you know, the couples are, how come we never heard of this before? Say, it's one of the best-kept secrets our church has. and it just is so wonderful for married life. It's not the easiest road. No. You know, popping the pill or whatever might be easier. But the effects, it is truly the salt. It is what makes life wonderful. It keeps the electricity towards from one another still there. The excitement, that yearning, that desire, there. It makes matrimony, and again, you know, even in that deciding whether we should or shouldn't be open, we together turn to the Lord to see, you know, and to, we are so grateful that our church held out,
stayed the course
in this area. I don't know that because this couple was certainly in the church, and they brought it to the diocese, but it was our church that shed light on that truth. They didn't throw us out when we told them, you're crazy, we can't live that initially. That's too difficult for us or whatever. They just kept on shedding light, kept on inviting us to it. Didn't lessen it, you know. If there's something else that I want to get through is that we are ordinary Joes. We are not, you know, anything different than the ordinary couple. That love one another on that altar and have strived, you know, to continue to do that. And really, throughout our married life, it has been the church, whether it was marriage encounter or natural family planning, that has kept us come back on the path when we have strayed off a little bit. It has been the church. And as I said in the very beginning, it is the sacrament of orders that has let us see that wonderful vision of all that matrimony can be.
You know, one of the things that we have experienced, too, is the tremendous pressure that the world has put on us as married couples, and you especially as priests, in this whole self generation or the past couple of years, where, and we were part of it in the beginning, saying to the priest, we can't live that. All right. I think it's been a wonderful response on the part of the priests in really caring for their people and listening to their people to start to maybe say, maybe they can't live it. Okay? We're sorry for the part we had in convincing you that we couldn't. Now we want to convince you that we can. Don't let us change your mind. The truth is wonderful, but it's the world's message constantly berating all of us that if you want sex, you have to have it. I'll never forget, maybe it's 12 years ago now, we were fortunate enough to speak at a deanery meeting. We gave a little presentation, we talked about the method, and then we opened it for questions, and the priest in the back stood up and he said, Joe, he said, suppose you wake up in the morning and Pat has a fever, so you can't depend on the temperature. And maybe she has a vaginal infection, so you can't check the mucus. And because of that, you don't want to take her cervix reading. He said, what do you do? I said, Father, leave her alone. She's too sick for intercourse. He hit himself in the head and sat down. What it clearly said to me was, the world has convinced all of us that if you want to have sex, you can't deny yourself. Husband and wife. He was really at the good of his heart trying to figure out what he's going to tell his couples when, you know, when they ask him that question. And it's simple. Leave her alone. So we're...
Do we have a couple minutes for the method, Bishop?
Yeah.
Okay. We just want to quickly... again, we teach here in the Newark Diocese, we teach couples to couples, engaged and married couples come to our course. And we talk about, we hopefully have a witness at every one of our precanas, a witness couple, at every one of our precanas and in marriage, engaged encounter weekends. And what, okay. With natural family, first of all, natural family planning realizes that after puberty, a male is fertile 365 days a year. And after puberty, a woman is fertile anywhere from 9 to 24 hours per cycle. So a woman has an infertile, fertile, and infertile phases to her cycle. So we really look at the woman. Cycle to determine when we as a couple are fertile and infertile. We know that sperm within the vaginal canal, within vaginal mucus, can live up to a few days a few hours to 2 days, and in some very extreme, really laboratory cases, has been known to live up to 5 days. Okay, so combined fertility is different. So when we generally look at the woman's cycle, what we have tried to do is separate it into three phases. And day one is the first day of her menstrual cycle. And from there to looking at some symptoms, she will find that first part, phase one, is an infertile phase of her cycle. Phase two is the fertile time of her cycle, and we do not try to pinpoint the absolute day of fertility, but perimeters of fertile time, because again, sperm can live for a number of days within the vaginal mucus. So there is a period of abstinence, or really the period of fertility in phase two. Phase three, once again, is an infertile time of fertility, all the way up to the first day of her cycle again. So for the means of natural family planning, we've divided a woman's cycle into three different phases. The three major signs of fertility that we teach, is the first one is basal body temperature, which is the lower part of this chart here. And the chart looks very complicated. We teach it a little bit at a time. The couples come back. We teach once a month for 4 months, and they keep on coming back with a complete cycle so that we know whether they understand what we're teaching. And basal body temperature is a woman's temperature at waking from the first day of a period up until ovulation. It is usually in a low of 97 to 97.5 phase a woman will see. Immediately upon ovulation, it goes up 3/10 to 5/10 of a degree and stays up. The thermometer that we use is in 1/10 increments, so you see every little move. So is the charting here. And once she ovulates, that temperature stays up until her next period. Okay, temperature just confirms that she has ovulated. It does not predict. It only confirms ovulation temperature. The next major sign of fertility that we teach is the vaginal mucus. That is sometimes referred to as the Billings method of natural family planning. And a woman learns how to become aware of and to be able to detect the changes in vaginal mucus. After her period, there are some days of dryness. That is this area in here that I'm talking about, running the chart. There are some periods of dryness. Then there is the beginning of some mucus. The mucus changes to a very distinctive lubricative, described much like raw egg white mucus, that is the very fertile mucus, changing back to the tacky yellow mucus, and then dries, completely dries. This is all a natural phenomena. I mean, it happens. This is the way that the Lord made us. And not everyone has it exactly the same, but what this is that you get in touch with your body, not this cycle, but your particular body and how it works. And we'll see that the fertile mucus comes at the same time that the temperature goes up. Okay? And right after ovulation, the mucus dries up until her next period. And the same thing with the cervix palpation. A woman learns how to palpate her cervix to see an infertile cervix is low, firm, and closed. As ovulation approaches, 5 to 7 days before ovulation, the cervix opens, rises, and becomes very pliable. And that's what this indicates here. And then immediately after ovulation, that cervix lowers, closes, and becomes firm again. And these three signs, each cycle, happen, okay? Whether the woman is going to ovulate on day 10 of her cycle or day 30 of her cycle, because the same hormones affect all three symptoms of ovulation. So when we first began, I had an irregular cycle, and I thought, gee, is this going to work? But again, whether one cycle you ovulate on the beginning or and the next one late in the cycle, those indications are there. Those symptoms are there.
Yeah. The wonderful gift that we have found that natural family planning really is, and this chart is what we use in this diocese here. You'll find charts throughout the diocese, all different. That really is not even the point. The point is that the method, especially the advent of the mucous sign and the cervix, which are predictors of ovulation, have cut down the period of abstinence if you choose not to achieve a pregnancy. What we have found in teaching natural family planning is that the gift of it is that once a couple learns it, learns the wonder and awe of their bodies, and to live in rhythm with it and is not in fear of it, okay? What we find is difficult to keep natural family planning teaches not pregnant. they become the most open to life people that we have. They're always pregnant. We find it difficult to get enough teachers. So although the first thing that I think a couple has to learn is how to postpone a pregnancy, because I think most of them come for that reason, what we have seen through the years is that it really is a very pro-life method of family planning. So the other gift of it is, and especially for our young couples, is that if they learn it now, it serves them for life. It can be used throughout their cycle. And then, you know, one of the saddest things, I mean, for friends of ours and our age couples, is that there comes that time in life at our ages, okay, where there really is a fear of pregnancy. You know, maybe their children are all moved out of the house. And the thought that, you know, they're going to start all over again is really kind of scary. There may be health situations and all these things. A real fear comes into that relationship. One of the things that would help them, that would really keep them close, a gift in marriage, is the sexual relationship. Yet that suffers the most because of this tremendous fear. And they may have gone through their lives and all the different artificial contraceptions with their effectiveness problems and the whole thing. So they, what has become the leading method of birth control in the United States today is sterilization. It's the last option. It's the last thing to do to make sure that you're not going to become pregnant. What we have found with natural family planning couples is that you may start out doing all of those charts. What really we want for the couple and what we've experienced is that you just become totally autonomous. Mm-hmm. You don't need the doctor for the prescription. You don't need the physicals for the check the IUDs and all of these other things and the pills and the whole thing. You know, at a pre-cana one time, we asked for questions. The couple had figured out how old we were and how many children, the whole thing. And he said, why are you worrying about all this charting and everything? Well, you know, why don't you just have a vasectomy and you don't have to worry about family planning anymore? And you know what came to us was that the Lord gave us this gift of fertility. He asked us to be responsible and generous with us, and He will take it from us. He asked us just to live with it. There will very soon come a time, we don't know when that is, when there will be no possibility that Pat and I will have any more children. And that's in His time. And I think natural family planning for a young couple to live with it their life is a wonderful gift for them.
We're really open for any questions, whether it be about the method or anything else that we've shared.
Not sure this would be an elegant question, but could you comment on either your marriage or other marriages that you know about, how when you're having intercourse during non-pregnant, non-fertile times, how that compares to that aspect of your life when you know you're pregnant, and from that point up to labor and delivery? Are those two different time periods are either similar or different, or one stronger, you know your love for each other in a stronger way than the other, or how that works in marriage?
Do you know the there's always been something. And I mean, it's the wonderful gift of God's creation as I see it now. The woman, even during her fertile time, physically becomes more attractive. Her breasts fall, you know, and that's why sometimes they have pain. She can get a rosy complexion. I mean, all kinds of things. You know what it is to me is, I mean, that's God's plan for procreation. The woman becomes more attractive during the fertile time because she wants to attract the man so that they procreate, okay? And I think a natural thing, what I experienced is that Pat became more beautiful in pregnancy, you know, in her disposition, you know, in a lot of different ways. I think that life within us, maybe it's the way we looked at it, but I think many, many couples we've spoken to do the same.
Yeah.
And there was a real physical attraction to one another, which spills over into the sexual union. A woman in that time all of a sudden has this nesting instinct. I mean, she would rather cling to you for 8 hours than anything else, you know, that you're going to be there, the
yeah.
vulnerableness of it.
Yeah. For myself, I think that if I had to say the different meanings, I think the times that we knew we were in the fertile time and trying to achieve a pregnancy was probably the greatest. That, I think that was a time where we knew... where I knew that we were really inviting the Lord to help us to become co-creators with him, you know, and that it is that potential just lifts everything, just makes it that much more awe-inspiring, even to yourselves, as you know. To me, that would, you know, would probably stand out. Yes.
It's wonderful that you put it into the context of God's plan. In the presentation of the EE program, Evening for the Engaged Encounter,
mm-hmm.
is that the best time to introduce this program or after marriage?
I think we have probably engaged in couples who are engaged. I know our program have a higher majority of engaged couples coming to it than married couples. A lot of times you get stuck, like we got. You get stuck buying into contraception. Once you've started, it's hard to open up to the possibility of something else, you know. And so maybe a witness, as I say, a witness to natural family planning at Engaged Encounter Weekend or at Pre-Canis is a good thing to invite the couples to come to then the course, to invite them to come to the course. You couldn't teach them the whole thing at an Engaged Encounter. But to invite them, I think that to get engaged in couples, I even think, you know, actually the whole, my heart, the whole thing of this is not just my plan, obviously, is so that mothers will teach us to their daughters and there will be no need for couples to teach couples. That it'd be a natural thing, you know, because it is such a wonderful thing for a woman to really be in touch with her body, to know why her mood is the way it is. To know why she's breaking out, to know what's happening inside of her, you know, and that it is God's creation as a part of his plan for me as a woman, and to live with it, not to try and change it or wipe it out or, you know, it's wonderful for young women. So I even think, you know, while not teaching, you know, the guidelines for not achieving a pregnancy, but for coming in touch with your body and your cycle, high school is a perfect time.
I almost think engaged encounter or engagement time in general. Most of those couples have made their decisions. They're under tremendous pressure from the world, which has told them, you know, when you get married, you both have to work for at least 5 years so that you have the house. Well, you know, she has to have a career, and I mean, it's terrible what the world has done to our young people, okay? But most of them that we speak to have really made the decisions already. If they're not already sexually active, engaged, then they certainly have made arrangements for the way they're going to artificially contracept when they first get married for that period of time. You know, one of the sad things about that is, I mean, it's a factoid. That's what Father Holmes said last night, but it's factually true, I think, that one out of every four couples is going to need some type of medical help to achieve a pregnancy, okay? So when we sit at Precanus and talk to these, we say, well, there's 28 couples here. Seven of you don't need to worry about artificial contraception because you can't get pregnant until you go, the doctor helps you, you know. That's a fact. But they're scared. I mean, if they don't have that 5 or 10 years, so I think it's in high schools and it's one, hopefully in family, you know, mother to daughter.
I would like to, one of the handouts we gave you was a report of a national conference of Catholic bishops. Dr. Grace A. Boyce did a survey, research project on NFP couples. And one of the things that we found out was that we really do need the support of our priests, in offering this, to reiterate what Bishop said, you don't have to know how the method absolutely works. Certainly, I'm sure whoever's teaching it in your diocese is more than happy to have you come or to sit down with them in their living room and teach it to you. But the main thing is the support, I think. Because there are a lot of couples who really believe that this is an important area, and support from their priests would mean a lot to them and has encouraged them to come. You know, and I know that we, as having found this gift for our marriage, and for many couples that we've taught natural family planning since 1976, I think. We've taught natural family planning. And for the lives that we've touched, I mean, we've been in NFP classes where a couple will come up after an engaged couple and say, he's moving out. Excuse me, they're living together. And, you know, what we don't have that yearning. They already don't have yearning. They're not even married yet. And they see something or hear something that, you know, that they want for their marriage. And they say, you know, he's going to move out. It's only 2 months away, but he's going to move back home until we get married, you know. And so there's that, you know, we need to know, this is the salt for our sacrament, that just feeds that yearning for one another. It makes our love real and alive. And we need that support, though, to say, don't always take the easy way, you know. Here's this wonderful gift, and natural family planning really is it. Thanks. Oh, go ahead.
What you've described is your spirituality. And do you ever use the term, or do you reflect on how within the movement?
Yeah. As teachers, we do. We don't always do it, you know, within the class, because the class is open to all couples, you know. We refer to it, certainly. We talk about our praying together during the difficult times of abstinence and during the decisions to be open to life or not. We do speak of that. I don't know that we absolutely, you know, say our spirituality.
Say is there any kind of a literature that talks about the spiritual as among the teachers?
No, is there a question? Yes. Yes, there is.
We just put together a nationwide certification process so that all dioceses that have natural family planning programs now will get the criteria for certification from the Washington office. Integrated into that is a theological or spiritual component. And that attempts to integrate spiritual and the theological into the overall pattern of instruction. All the dioceses now are being urged to present themselves in terms of their program for approval, and then submit the names of their couples for certification, so that there will be a day when all National Family Planning couples
will have been certified as to their knowledge of the system and abilities to teach it. That's the second part. So that's being integrated.
So I have a question. If I heard you correctly, you participated in Marriage Encounter, and at that point God became real in your life, a real type of spiritual experience at that point. And because of that, you're together as a couple growing close to God. Then you wanted to get in line with church teaching with in mind that you wanted to get closer to the Lord.
And one another.
What if you're strong in that area, like this is the church teaching, and you know God is so real in our life now, we want to sort of follow the laws of the church here, on one part or both together?
Certainly, I think we came from that. We came from that originally, even though the Lord wasn't absolutely real, we wanted to be in line with the church before, you know, as I say, we opened a Love and Life type of a thing. No, this was before, way before, when we first got married, yeah. And then kind of drifted away and lost that, you know, and bought the world's version of what marriage was supposed to be and whatever, and had that whole experience of emptiness and, you know, consciousness. Yeah, and finding one another was the most, the communication, but with that along came the realness of the Lord,
So the realness of the Lord happened first, and then together you work towards natural family planning, wanting to get in line with the church.
Okay.
Lord on that.
Yeah, well, if I had to kind of put it in chronicle, we started out on marriage, with Catholic roots. Mm-hmm. You know, we did go to Mass, et cetera, et cetera. And then as we got into that whole disillusionment time, Mass was an option depending on how early we want to get to the lake. You know what I mean? It was kind of when we went, we felt good about going. We received, we did the whole thing, but it was not a major priority. I think what happened at Marriage Encounter was the rediscovery of each other, and we started to deal with a lot of issues in our life. If you've made the Marriage Encounter, you know, the dialogue, through that dialogue and daily dialogue, we started to go into a lot of areas. One of the last areas we went into was contraception. You know what I used to think about? I remember the difficulty in first making the decision to artificially contracept. I used to have this fear that we rush in and we go to this natural family planning and then we start having, you know, we had 2 children in 2 years. Do I want to open up that floodgates and have 6 or 7 more children and either have to make the decision to artificially contracept? So it was an area, I used to think that it was a scar that I had that healed over. And I didn't really want to pick at it that much. I didn't want to open up that whole area again. It naturally progressed.
With the trust in one another,
yes.
And in the Lord. I mean, it's hard to measure out exactly what was, mm-hmm. you know, first or strongest or whatever.
Well, I think one of the real things was, you know, the experience of God, the experience of Jesus, really happened for me, in this relationship. The fact of forgiveness. I could understand His forgiving me when I was forgiven in this relationship, and all of the different aspects of the relationship, when I felt selfless about doing something for Pat, his being selfless to me was real. I don't know. I could never explain that theologically. It's kind of what happened in our relationship.
I was wondering, do the couples come from both aspects? For example, young couples just get married. The Lord's not real in their life. You know, they've been basically Sunday Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
Do they get interested in natural family planning without really having a real spiritual awakening? Whereas I think couples that have